Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network Saturday, July 7th, 2018. This is episode 1503. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech. Yeah, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that rigmarole, all that digital jazz, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, I'd love you still to call. We all over the world we have listeners, but you can't call that toll-free number from those other countries. So you have to use Skype or some sort of voice over the internet protocol to call us. 888-827-5536. Hope you had a good Independence Day or Canada Day, and that you're ready to roll, ready to talk high tech. Look at this thing. I have in my hands a piece of history. You know, one of the things about technology that's generally the case, they called it Moore's Law, really, right? Gordon Moore, one of the founders of Intel, said that what he said literally was the density of transistors on a processor, on a chip, would double every 18 months. That's what he said. But it's often translated into the power of a chip. The capabilities of a chip would double every 18 months. And that's roughly the same. And if you understand doubling every 18 months, you understand, well, it doubles, and then in 3 years it quadruples, and then in 4.5 years, it 8 times 8, and because it's doubling every year and a half, you know, it doesn't take long before you get some pretty powerful stuff, and we've seen that, haven't we? In fact, we're finally at this point, I think, getting to the point where processors aren't getting much faster. They're not. The number of transistors might be doubling, I guess, but I don't think so. We got the point now where there's so much density on the processor, you can't get much more dense. So in general, though, what that means is things get faster and cheaper, lower power. I mean, it's kind of a miracle. It's the miracle of the microcosm, as George Gilder said. And it's what's powered Silicon Valley. And yet there are some things that don't follow that rule, physical things. Like, I don't know, keyboards. Screens have gotten better, haven't they? Oh, yeah. You can't use a screen. Five-year-old, I was looking at an old MacBook Air. And that screen is not what Apple calls a retina display. It's not a very high resolution. And you can see it's like blurry. It looks like it's a little out of focus. And then you use one of the more modern high resolution displays, PC or Mac, and you go, yeah, that's crisp. You watch TV now on a 4K HDR screen. It's like, wow, that looks real. So screens have gotten a lot better. But you know, there's another input device you use, something you use every time you use a computer that has gotten worse. And I think everybody agrees, they've gotten worse. Keyboards, and Apple's the worst. Apple's keyboards are horrible. So I did a strange thing the other day. I went to a website called clickykeyboards.com, and I bought a 28-year-old keyboard. It's an IBM M-series keyboard that are widely considered by keyboard connoisseurs to be among the best, not maybe the best. The predecessor to the M was the F-series that some say were better, but they have an odd layout. This is the 104 modern keyboard layout. So that's good. It was, I guess, for an IBM PC, right? The thing's heavy. Things like almost 6 pounds. It's bulky. It's a beast. And it uses this key technology that looks medieval. It's what they call a buckling spring keyboard. And so under each key, there's literally a spring that as you depress it, it compresses like a spring normally would until it gets to the point where it can't compress anymore and it goes doing. It's jumps sideways. You've seen springs do that. You press, and go doing. Well, normally that's a defect, right? But in this keyboard, that's what it's supposed to do. When it springs sideways, this little hip check, it closes the switch and the key is typed. A buckling key. Now, we've come up with, everybody seems to think, a better system since then. You know, most keyboards nowadays have a rubber dome that you press. This makes much more sense. I don't know who thought up this buckling key is a very strange technology. The rubber dome, it makes sense. You press the key, the dome compresses like a little air bubble, and it closes the switch, and that's the keystroke. They're softer. They last a long time. You can have less travel, which is important because we're making computers thinner and thinner. But you get to the point sometimes where it gets too thin. Somebody said, I think it was Casey Johnston, she hates the new Macintosh keyboards, that Apple's suffering from design anorexia. The kind of almost at this point psychotic desire for thinness to the point where you're losing functionality. Apple's laptops are so thin, they don't have room for the keys to move. So they had to develop a new switch. They call it the butterfly key. And a switch that just, it locks that key in place. It's very solid, very rigid, travels about a millimeter, I think a little more, maybe a millimeter and a half, and then boom, hits bottom, closes the switch, and you've typed the key. But for a lot of us, it's not a satisfactory feeling. It doesn't move very far. You could compare that to typing on an iPad, where you're typing on glass, where there's no motion. That's even worse, right? It's hard to be accurate. You want a little feedback. You want to know that your finger has depressed a key. Something's happened. Maybe a nice solid chunk. That's for us old school types. Now, if you ever used a typewriter, it's even worse, right? A manual typewriter, you literally are flipping up a lever, boom, that hits the paper, the platen, boom, with an audible clack. These aren't quite as clacky as that, but this is the Model M key. You want to hear what a buckling? This will remind you of visiting the Department of Motor Vehicles, or maybe at the airport. I'm sorry, we can get you on a later flight. Let me just check. That's that sound. And actually, I think ergonomics is a study of motion and the body, say that these keyboards are better for you, less likely to cause what they call carpal tunnel syndrome. But then I don't know. Is that true? It's sure more satisfying. You know you hit a key. It's like a sledgehammer. Weighs like a sledgehammer, too. Maybe this is my protest against the Apple keyboards. There's another bigger problem with the Apple keyboards, which Apple's finally admitted, which is that if a crumb gets under this little tiny key, there's no way to get it out. You have to pretty much replace the keyboard. And guess what? It turns out a certain percentage of computer users, I don't know who would do this, eat croissants and cookies and crackers and Cheetos when they're typing. And they get under the keys quite a bit. There's food. Yes. Who would do that? No, you should be in a clean, sterile environment, washing your hands. I'm sure that's what Apple thought when they tested it. They needed to get some Cheeto users in there to test it. People eating their Fritos, Doritos, Biscoff cookies. Get them in there and test it. Then see what happens. Apple said, all right, we'll replace your gosh darn keys. Or your entire keyboard if we have to. It's expensive because Apple also, when they made these special keyboards, they glued the battery to the back of them. So when you can't take the keycaps off, it'll break them, especially the space bar. So they can't really just take them apart and clean it with a compressed air as you used to do in the old days. No, they actually have to unscrew the entire computer and take the top off and replace it for $700. It's a lot for a $1,400 computer. Give me buckling springs. I guess I'm officially an old guy now. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. The wonderful and talented Kim Schaffer is there. She's answering the phone. She'll get you ready for your appearance on nationwide radio. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. Let's talk high tech. What's your favorite keyboard? Do you still use one of those clicky keys? Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, spinning some smooth jazz, Mr. Michael Cozio, our musical conductor. And in the smooth jazz
room. I don't think
it's
jazz.
What is it?
It's, I can't remember the band's name. Michael whispered in your ear, but it's 311.
311,
yeah,
you know it?
It's more kind of ska-ish. I don't know. It's
Oh, you kids in your ska.
It's definitely not jazz.
It's smooth jazz. Wouldn't you hear this on The Quiet Storm?
No, you would not.
Oh, see, I don't know.
They would never play 311 on The Quiet Storm.
Okay, so there you go. It's summer music. Summer cool music. Hello, Kim Schaffer. Are you enjoying a cool summer?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a little cooler today. It's been kind of hot.
Has it been hot? Okay, yeah. I went up the coast.
Did you?
To a little, beautiful. For the 4th, to a little place called Mendocino. You ever hear of it?
No, never. Yeah. No.
Mendocino.
One of my ferry boats is called the Mendocino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do up there. I think logging, because there's a lot of trees.
Town.
I don't know what, but it's a.
It's just beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Beautiful.
And they had a 4th of July parade that was straight out of the 50s.
But aren't they, most of them?
Yes. Well, so am I. So it started with the fire trucks.
Yep.
And they go by, practically had a Dalmatia on the seat, you know? I mean, it's very cute. I really enjoyed it.
The one that I go to has a lot of old military vehicles.
Didn't have any of those, just fire trucks.
Fire trucks.
Although there was a fort nearby, Fort Bragg.
Yeah.
So they could. I don't know. Maybe Fort Bragg, has the monopoly on military
vehicles. Well, no, the parade I go to, it's a private owner. He's got a whole museum of these military vehicles. He owns our trash company in San Rafael.
This sounds like a very complicated...
It's a convoluted story, but he owns like the Marines garbage
really?
Place, and he has his
does
own
does he
museum
do a private
vehicles.
Garbage parade for the 4th of July? What is
Not garbage. He just has the vehicles. He's purchased a lot of old vehicles.
And do they come and collect the trash?
No, they don't.
Because that'd be funny.
It would be funny. It would be very funny.
Meanwhile,
yeah.
You've been slaving over the hot phone system.
Yeah, and I don't know. It might be a little hot in New Mexico where Doug in Albuquerque just bought a new house.
Is.
And he wants to know how to pimp his house out with all the Wi-Fis and routers and TVs.
I noticed you didn't write Albuquerque.
I was not even going to try to spell that. I just said, screw it. I was going to Google it, but I said,
I don't know. Doug will know. But imagine having a city that no one knows how to spell.
No, it's too complicated.
ALB, what is it, Doug? ALBUQUERQUE, something like that?
I look it up each time. I don't
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Doug.
Hi. Hey, I know you recommended different things, and if I search your website, I'll get all different recommendations, but I was wondering what your latest and greatest is for mesh routing, and just routing in particular. I have about a 3,200 two-story house that I just bought. I don't move in till August 1st. And I also looking for a recommendation on a really good 4K TV in like the 75 to 80 inch.
Ooh, nice.
Anything else I can buy? What do you recommend? A soundbar?
Soundbar, okay. Soundbar, TV, mesh router. So we'll start with the mesh router. The reason you see a number of recommendations on the website is they kind of, some of them have different features, different benefits. So there isn't necessarily one size fits all. The mesh routers have really taken over for a few reasons. One, because Wi-Fi has gotten so congested. So many people are using so many devices. In my house now, there's more than 50 different devices on the Wi-Fi when you include things like the, you know, the Echoes and the TV sets now are on the Wi-Fi. All the video stuff's on the Wi-Fi. My doorbell's on the Wi-Fi. I even have a toaster oven that's on Wi-Fi. So that's one problem Wi-Fi is facing now, is kind of the proliferation of Wi-Fi connected devices. Then there's also the neighbors who have the same thing and lots of Wi-Fi in their house. And then, you know, you have a big house, so you're stretching it out over a long distance. So these are all problems. There's one more I would add, which is lately Wi-Fi or routers in general, network routers in general, have been attacked by hackers. It turns out they're computers. They have processors. They have memory. They have operating systems. And unfortunately, they're often neglected by the manufacturers. They don't get updates. And so they become targets. And they're really good targets from the point of view of bad guys, not because they want to attack your system, although it does give them access to your home network, but more because it's a little computer that's always on the internet that can easily be used to attack other systems. And there's one right now called VPN Filter that at its high point affected 500,000 routers of all different makes and models. So this is becoming a big issue. And for that reason, the mesh router is also a win, because almost always, in fact, all the mesh routers I know get automatic firmware updates, regular ones, from their manufacturers. And their manufacturers kind of keep on top of it. So the downside to mesh is it's more expensive. You're buying at least two units, usually three and maybe more. And they're expensive for that reason. Although all good routers have gotten to the point where they're more than $100 now, and often more than $200. So they're expensive, but so is every other decent router. The days of the $40 Linksys are long gone, thank goodness. So I like Eero a lot. They're a sponsor, but that's what I use. Two different ones at home. I have two different networks. One is Eero. And Eero is just kind of the best general all-purpose. If you want the highest speed routers, those are the Netgear Orbis, O-R-B-I. But there are technical differences that I'm not sure it's worth spending a lot of time with. But TrueMesh, Eero's TrueMesh, Orbis a little bit, not quite TrueMesh. And there's a third kind of off-brand that Comcast invested in. In fact, if you buy Comcast's new Xfinity Wi-Fi, you'll get some of these Plumes. And Plume is great for a unique situation where you want to have Wi-Fi that isn't subject to much interference. So it depends on how spread out you are. Plume, you have to buy one for every room, and you make little pools of Wi-Fi. I'll get to the rest of your questions in a little bit. There's lots more, but we got to take a break. Scott Wilkinson coming up too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, I'm going to have Scott answer your TV and soundbar questions.
Oh, good.
Because he's our home theater guy, yeah. But
I have 2.5 acres, so I'm not like, my neighbor's not like right next to me.
Yeah, I thought we had 3 acres, and somehow I managed to see 5 or 6 other routers. You don't see other access points?
I haven't really tried yet.
Yeah. It's just weird. But if you're more than 200 feet from your nearest neighbor, yeah, you don't have to worry about that so much. Nevertheless, your own interference causes much of a problem.
The house does have the Ring doorbell and several.
Yeah, letters. Yeah. You will inevitably. So the way the Eeros work is each Eero unit's about 1,500 square feet. But the base package, you can buy them one at a time, but they have a package for three. I can't remember how much it is, but that's probably what you'd get. And you connect one to the cable modem or the DSL modem. That's your base station. And then so that's the main unit. And then there's two beacons that plug into the wall anywhere. And they're not wired, but they extend your Wi-Fi. And they come with apps that'll help you, kind of place them. You'll plug it in, the app will say, no, that's too far, and you move a little closer. No, you know, oh, that's excellent. So the app will help you place them appropriately to spread it out. We have, you know, it's funny. It's not completely, square footage. My mom has a smaller place, but because she has an outhouse and because of the way it's not a bathroom outhouse, she has a studio out in the back. Mom lives in the country. I think five for her, and I have five in our 4,500 square foot house just because of the topology. But that's the nice thing is you can buy more as you need them. So probably three to start with. Plume, you're going to buy a little plume thing that plugs into the wall. You'll buy one base unit, and then a little plume plugs into the wall in every room that you want Wi-Fi. And it tends to be – the way plume kind of works is I think for you it's not as necessary. It's for congested where there's lots of Wi-Fi signals, and that's because it's just a pool of Wi-Fi. It's all 5G, so it doesn't spread through the walls and stuff. So it's really good for avoiding interference with other Wi-Fi signals. Doesn't sound like a problem for you. So I think the Eero would be great. And the nice thing about the Eero, and this is true of Plume too, but absolutely with Eero, is they get updates every few weeks as they, not just for security, but as they, you know, improve. And I've been very impressed with some of the features that they've added. The negative on the Plume is that they want a subscription fee now, which I understand. But it's a little hard when you've been buying something outright to say now, oh no, this is a yearly or monthly subscription. It's not hugely expensive. So
I think I'll go with the Eero.
I would go with the Eero, and they have a generous return policy. So you try it right away, see if it helps.
Yeah. By the way, my wife's given me a $5,000 budget, so I got to keep everything within that budget.
All right. That's good to know. All right. So the Euros aren't going to be too big a chunk. The biggest chunk is going to be the TV. But for that, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, he's Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru from the AVS Forum, where he is the editor. Scott is the king of home theater. And it's perfect timing because, of course, we're talking right now to Doug, whose wife has given him a $5,000 budget.
Ooh, nice.
And he wants to spend it all.
I think we can do that.
So we helped him with the mesh router, and I think we've concluded that Eero is the right way to go on that. I have to say, though, Scott, if your home theater is, as it often is, if you have cable modem anyway, near the modem, I would go wired with all the home theater stuff if you can.
Totally agree.
Wi-Fi, you get buffering and stuff. So you'll put the base unit next to the cable modem, which is presumably near the big screen TV, and that way you can wire the Eero, and most routers have extra, you know, they have one INI for the LAN, for the WAN rather, for the cable modem, and then one Audi for the LAN that you could then plug into a switch, which is what I do. I have a big 24 port switch, and then each device, you know, the AV receiver, the Roku, the Apple TV, they all have an Ethernet input. And that way you get the best, I think you get the best results.
Yep.
So he also wants the best TV, Scott, under $5,000. And he says big.
So how big?
Yeah. Well, my wife says I can have 75 to 80 inches.
Ooh, nice.
Scott often talks about the SAF, the spousal acceptance factor.
Yes.
And you
Which
have...
is surprising. It's surprising that how many wives typically are fine with large flat screen TVs, whereas they aren't fine with putting speakers all around the room.
Ah, well, that's why he wants a sound bar as well.
Yes, exactly. Well, a 75 or 80 inch TV in the $5,000 range, man, you could get.
I've got to get all of my.
Everything.
Everything for $5,000. Okay, all right. So how do we allocate the budget? How much do you want to spend on the TV? Two or three, maybe?
Well, you tell him because we just spent $400 on his router. So he's got he's got $4,600 left for a sound system and a TV.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So a 75 or 80 inch TV, I would say
you can't get an OLED for that, can you?
No. No, you can't. Certainly not a 77-inch.
How
OLED.
Far? Let me ask this: how far from the TV will you be, Doug? Where will you be
Good
sitting?
Good question.
Well, the living. I have a very long living room that's about 14 feet wide. Unfortunately, it's kind of bright. It's got a lot of windows.
Ooh, that's too bad.
But I can set up anywhere within the 22 feet, I think it is.
Closer is better, obviously. And, of course, if you're distant from the TV, if you're more than, say, 10 feet from the TV, then you don't have to worry about OLED. You don't have to worry so much about 4K because you're so far away.
Well, you're not going to get anything but 4K at this point.
I guess that doesn't matter, yeah.
It really doesn't matter. And because you have light in the room, do you watch TV during the day typically sometimes?
Well, not a lot, but yeah.
Sometimes. So you need something bright. So an OLED. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said if I turn the TV on and start watching something, I'm kind of lost. Nothing gets done, so I try to leave.
I can't. I have no idea what you mean.
I know that story, yeah. Well, okay, so my first impression is that an OLED probably wouldn't be the right thing for you anyway. You need something brighter for those times when you do watch during the day. So I would steer you toward a Vizio, which is generally my go-to brand for inexpensive or budget-oriented, value-oriented, shall we say. And I'm pretty sure I'm looking up now to see. I know they make 75 and 80 inch TVs.
Scott, you're making poor Doug so unhappy. He thought he had a big budget, and you're telling him he has to get a value television.
Well, at 80 inches.
All right.
That's a big TV.
So that's the trade-off. Is the bigger the size, of course. Yeah.
I mean, a 77 inch OLED. You're talking $8,000.
I'm looking at a 75-inch P-Series from Vizio. The P-Series is their performance, right?
Yep.
And
that
that's $2,100. That's not
there
too,
you go.
That's not too bad. 4K Ultra HD Dolby Vision.
Yep.
It's active full array backlighting, which is what you want.
It's exactly what you want. Full array local dimming backlighting. That's exactly correct.
That's going to be a pretty nice TV.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question about it. I would not get a Samsung because they do not support Dolby Vision. Sony, I don't remember whether they make a 75-inch or not. Let me see. It would be the X900.
So Sony. This is the P-Series. Is that the top of the line from Vizio? Is that their best?
It is. Mm-hmm.
So this is not bad. They've cut the price, and this is the 2018, the brand new one.
Yep.
For 75 inches to $2,100. That's bad.
That really isn't bad at all.
That leaves us a lot of money for a sound bar. What do you think for a sound bar? Vizio makes sound bars, too. Should he get a Vizio?
Vizio makes sound bars, yeah, which are very good. There are plenty of sound bars out there.
Let's Sony keep him under budget because I think I'm going to want him to get an AV receiver and stuff. But so let's keep him under budget and say, is there something he can get for $1,000?
Oh, easily. $1,000. The Sony HT5000, I believe it is something on the order of $1,200, and that's like cream of the crop soundbar territory.
Is that a subwoofer plus a soundbar?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it has simulated Dolby Atmos immersive sound all over the place.
What's the model number again on that?
Let me look it up here. I think it's the it has the 5000 in it. I think it's the HS or HT 5000 sound
late,
bar.
Late summer, their Atmos sound bars are coming out.
Yeah, ST5. Let's see. Here we go. Sony. The wireless sound bar.
You're saying Sony now.
Sony. HT-ST5000.
Okay.
List for $1,500, but it'll give you full Dolby Atmos immersive sound. It's a wonderful sound bar.
There you go.
I normally don't recommend it because it's so expensive for a sound bar. you can get sound bars for a couple $100, but this one is premium.
We're filling a big room, aren't we? So that's...
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. Very good point. Yeah. So if you've got the money to spend, man, that sound bar is awesome.
And a high spousal acceptance factor because you don't have speakers all over the place and speaker wire all over the place.
That's right. As I said, spouses love flat panel TVs. They do not love speakers all over the place.
Doug, so there we go. We get your Vizio P Series 10 or HDR 4K Ultra HD, and that's 75 inches for $2,100. Add another $1,200 for that nice Sony HT sound bar. and you're under budget.
I heard you mention AV receiver. Do I need that?
Well,
no.
Scott says no, and you don't with a sound bar, but I'll tell you why I use one, because it allows me to have, and maybe you don't need this, a bunch of other devices hooked into the system. Well, and then I use the AV receiver to power a surround sound system, so you don't need that because you've got a sound bar.
Yeah, you don't need that, exactly. Yeah. Now, I'm looking to make sure that this one has HDMI inputs, because it has three HDMI inputs, because if you're going to use it with a sound bar, I mean, with an AV receiver, you're going to need to send HDMI from the receiver.
Let's eliminate that, because if you've got enough HDMI inputs, he can plug a Roku into it or an Apple TV.
Or a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, then you're set. I think, Doug, we haven't spent all your money, but I'm sure you'll find some place to throw the extra couple of $100. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson, for helping out.
You bet. My pleasure.
You'll find Scott at avsforum.com. where he helps you spend your money and sometimes save it. And, of course, here each week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. There we go, Doug. Your beautiful new desert home is fully equipped.
Oh, man. That soundbar, very, very few people would actually spend that kind of money on a soundbar. But if you can, it's the best. I think it's the best soundbar you can get, period.
Yeah, well, it sounds like what I'm going to try and get.
Give us a review when you get it, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
I will.
Thanks,
sure.
Doug.
Sure. All right, thank you, Leo.
Have a good one. Take care.
I appreciate it.
All right.
You bet. You bet. I was just looking here at the Sony X900F, which is another TV. But they're 75 inches, $3,800.
Yeah. I think that Vizio sounds like a good deal.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
And those are good TVs.
You know, in a short while, I'm going to be getting the next generation Vizio P series, but it's only available in 65 inches.
Right.
So I might have, if it were available in 75, I would say you might want to hold off and wait for this one. But if you want something that big, then this one's not going to work. Unfortunately, the other one I might recommend is the Hisense H10, which is a 75-inch, but it's not available in the U.S. So, well, there you go.
There you go. I think as last time I checked, Albuquerque was in the U.S.
Yeah! So that Vizio, man, plus that soundbar, oh my God, that's going to be an awesome system.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm happy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right, as you can see, 153 seconds to make your own. And can you stick around for the top of the hour?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. By the way, am I pretty seriously delayed here? Have I got a problem with this new Skype?
No. The lip sync looks good now. At first, it was really off. And you just ignore the chat room, please.
Yeah.
it's okay now. It did come and go. I think it just stabilizes. You know, you had just installed it, so.
Well, yeah, and I didn't. It automatically, all of a sudden, Skype looked different, and I went, "What?"
Yeah,
nothing on my part that I did. Yeah, anyway,
you don't have a choice, and that's just the way it is from now on. So,
yeah,
but no, it looks good. I think once it adjusted, it just looks good.
Okay, cool. And then I will talk to the chat room. Hey, everybody, nice to see you. I did see Ant-Man and the Wasp yesterday. It's really fun and really funny. Paul Rudd, I think, is great. He does a great job. And my review is up on AVS Forum, so be sure to check that out. Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike. If he can do with a 75 weight for the new P-Series with NanoSys QD, quantum dots. Sorry, Mike, not true. It's only going to be available in a 65. And it's not going to be available. At least that's as far as I know. That's what Vizio has told me. 65-inch only. Otherwise, I would have said maybe wait. Exactly. Twisted Mister says he has a big room, no sound bar. Well, you know, that there is an argument for that. And I forgot to ask him if he's got a flat ceiling. I hope he does, because that Atmos, the overhead sounds are going to be bounced off the ceiling with that Sony soundbar. so nice to see Mike Heiss in the room. Beatmaster, HDR will make a difference at almost any distance. That is correct. 4K will not. Although there is something to be said for 4K, even at a too far of a distance, in terms of artifacts. And we can talk more about that after...
That would be lovely.
At the top of
that
the
bridge. That would be lovely, Scott. Talk to you then.
Indeed.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. If you have a question, comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Line two, my friend Ellie in Honolulu. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. And then I go months and I don't talk to you at all.
I know. What's up?
We're going on a cruise around the Hawaiian Islands next month.
Wait a minute. Ellie, you live in Hawaii.
Right. But the best way to see the other islands is to get on a ship and go from island to island. That way you don't have to fly over.
That's my favorite thing about cruises is you unpack once and then the cities come to you.
Right.
You say, wow, we're in a new place today. Well, good. Well, it sounds wonderful.
What I want to know is, what do I do as far as, emails and phone service and all this stuff? The ship is saying you have to buy their package. The phone company says buy their package.
Well, don't do either. And the worst deal of all is something called Cellular at Sea, which is just a terrible thing. And sometimes phones will just kind of do it automatically. The ship runs its own, quote, cell site that they charge you through the nose to use. Since you're going to be just offshore almost all the time, I presume, there'll be days when you're at sea that you aren't near any cell site at all.
Right, and the ship wants like so much for the week, unlimited use.
They could say unlimited, but ship internet is terrible. Terrible. There's only one exception that I've found, and that's Royal Caribbean. They have a service called Vroom that actually is pretty fast. I don't know how they're doing it.
We're going NCL. So.
Yeah. Normally, cruise ships use marine satellites for their internet. And often it's as slow as a few megabytes for everybody on the boat. So what'll happen is you have to get up in the middle of the night.
Yeah. The phone company's telling me, if you use it, you're going to get charged roaming charges.
Well, you're in the United States.
I know.
You're in the United States. So when you're in port, I presume you're in ports that have cell service.
Yes.
And you're a Hawaiian, so you have a cell company that works well in the islands. So I think you're going to be fine as long as you don't mind using your cell service for data when you're in port. When you're at sea, you won't have a choice because you'll be too distant from the cell towers, right?
Right.
But at that point, you have a couple of choices. You could use the ship's Wi-Fi. I think you'll find it very inadequate, almost certainly. You don't have to buy it now. You can ask on the first day, go to the business center and see how fast it is, you know?
Yeah, and they're telling me, if you buy it now, it's cheaper. Once you get on board, we charge more.
That's true, because right now you don't know how bad it is. And so if they can get you to buy it now, it'll be better.
Right.
So I've never used the shipboard internet on a NCL cruise, but I think it's probably much like all the rest. Very, very, very slow. Now, you've looked at the map, right? You don't go, you probably aren't, there's probably getting island to island, there's going to be an hour or two where you're, distant from shore. But if you're near shore, most of the time you're near shore, you'll have cell service.
Yeah, there's a couple of nights where you lay over, like on Maui and the Big Island.
Well, you'll have cell service, right? And if you don't mind using that as your data, that's what I would do. And I would not buy the expensive ship offerings. And it isn't roaming. Who's your carrier?
AT&T. That's what they told me.
Why would it be roaming? You're not leaving the country. It's Maui, so far away. Well, obviously, they didn't understand. You're still in the U.S. So as long as you're in the U.S., it's not data roaming. It's on AT&T. And if AT&T has good service, you could check that ahead of time. It has good service in Maui, which actually I'm pretty sure it does. And the other places that you're going, you'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I you're not.
It's just a little confusing, you know.
Yeah, well, it sounds like so the thing to understand is if you use cellular at sea, or you use the ship's, you know, data on your phone, that's roaming, and it is expensive. So the key is to turn off data roaming on your phone. There's a switch that says don't use data roaming. That's usually off by default, but just check. It's in the cellular connections information. Turn that off. That way you will never roam. You'll never join the cellular at sea network. You'll never spend $10 a minute on a phone call. And you'll just use your normal local cell service. Look, you're on vacation. You could be disconnected for a minute.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And they're telling me, oh, we have a social media package. I said, that's
please.
What I want to get away from.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I think as long as your cell phone gives you enough bandwidth, and have you ever used your cell phone as your sole connection to the internet?
Yeah, many times.
If you're happy with that, that's all you need. It's a different matter entirely if you were traveling internationally. But you're, it's
first, right, that's what I thought. Yeah, but they're telling me all this crazy nuts stuff.
I know King Kamehameha wanted to take Hilo back, but no. You're still in U.S. waters. You're okay.
Okay.
Have a great trip. When are you going to do that?
The beginning of August.
Oh, my, I'm jealous. I am jealous. Have a great time. I think you'll love it.
Okay.
All right.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Pete, Plimpton Township, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pete. Maybe I pressed the wrong button. Hello, Pete. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Leo, Pete.
Are you unmuted, Pete? Unmute.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Hey, I did that cruise to Hawaii in May.
Oh, tell us all about it.
Do not get cell service. You got cell just fine.
Yeah, whenever you're in port, you got your normal service.
Right, I did NCL. I did the exact same cruise.
Now, how's the Wi-Fi on that boat?
It's okay.
It's usable.
No, but I wouldn't do it. I would do it because I have AT&T.
Yeah, you don't need it.
The
problem with the way most ships do Wi-Fi, they charge you by the amount of data. You know, you buy, you know, a few hundred. Yeah, you go through it real fast.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is that your wife in the car? Who's that in the car?
Oh, it's Rosie.
Hi, Rosie. Hey, Rosie.
Do you remember us? We visited you. I gave you my mom's spaghetti sauce.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was the best sauce ever. I thought I remembered you, Pete. Now I remember you.
Heck yeah.
I've been living on your mom's spaghetti sauce for years now.
Wonderful. I love it, too. I just had some yesterday.
There's nothing like mom's cooking, you know, even if it's Pete's mom.
That's right. I wanted to ask you, my phone, I have a 32-gig phone. It's an Android phone.
Yeah.
And I keep running out of memory, going around a room, internal storage.
Yeah.
Instead of me,
32 should be enough unless you install thousands of apps. Kind of.
No.
What you need to do is reduce the number of apps. And then really the biggest thing that uses up space on a phone is the camera, photographs. Put Google Photos on there. It's free. They have a button in Google Photos. It'll upload all the photos. Turn that on. So it stores it at photos.google.com. Then they have a button that says, once a photo's backed up, do you want us to delete it? And you say yes. Periodically delete the old photos. They're still available. You can even look at them on the phone because you're looking at Google Photos. But you don't spend a lot of your precious storage with the photos. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great day, Pete. Yeah, da, 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 da. And now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you Scott Wilkinson.
Oh, thank you very much.
The king of the tuba. Oompa Loompa.
Oompa Loompa.
All yours, Scott. 502 seconds of fun.
Woohoo! So I've been talking with Marsworm in the chat room about the Vizios P-Series. He's got a 2015 P-Series, which is in need of some repair, about $350. And he's wondering whether he should do that or buy a 2018 D-Series, which is quite a bit lower in capabilities, for about the same, roughly $350. And that's a pretty good question. I mean, the P-Series absolutely is better than the D-Series. I would think, and he just mentioned that the 2015 P-Series does have HDR. I suspect it's HDR 10 only, not Dolby Vision. The current P-Series does Dolby Vision and HDR 10. And I think HLG as well. That's a third high dynamic range format that's becoming more important, especially now with the World Cup. BBC uses it in their high dynamic range streaming, and DirecTV uses it in their high dynamic range satellite broadcasts of the World Cup. At least you get that in the U.S., nowhere else. But anyway, so HLG is kind of coming up as a third primary or major HDR format. And I doubt that the 2015 P-Series does that or Dolby Vision. It probably only does HDR 10. The D-Series doesn't do Dolby Vision either. It does do HDR 10 and HLG. So in that sense, it's probably better. It probably also has better smart TV functionality, although that may or may not be important to you. The downside of the D-Series has to do with the number of zones. So all of Vizio TVs for, I think, since 2015 and even before, used this technique that Leo and I were talking about called FALD, F-A-L-D, Full Array Local Dimming. And what that does is it has LEDs behind the screen in a two-dimensional array. So there's a bunch of LEDs back there. And they're divided into zones. And those zones can be independently brightened and dimmed so that over here you have a bright part of the picture and those LEDs get brighter. And over here you have a darker part of the image and those LEDs get dimmer. It increases the contrast, better screen uniformity. Generally, I absolutely recommend FALD over edge lighting where the LEDs are just along the edge of the screen. Now, the D series, now in the Vizio different series, they have a P, an M, an E, and a D. As you move down those lines, those series, the number of zones decreases. So the P series has the most number of zones, and the D series has the least number of zones. And with FALD, the more zones you have, the better. So the D series is going to have very few zones. I don't remember exactly how many. Twisted Mister, think flashlights as backlights to explain local dimming zones. Sure, so you've got a bunch of flashlights sitting behind the screen, and each one can be dimmed or brightened independently. So the D series, I was just looking up the D series. I don't know if it tells how many zones they have. It says full array local LED, but it doesn't say how many zones. Typically, I think the M series has like 32, and the E series might have 16, and the D series might have 8, and that's very low, very low. So my inclination, and please, if you're in the chat room and you have a different idea about this, let us know. But in my opinion, I would probably spend the money to fix the P-Series, primarily because of the increased number of dimming zones. Now, I don't know if the P-Series does HLG. The 2015. Now, remember, it's 2015 P-Series versus 2018 D-Series. So the 2015 P-Series probably does HDR 10 and probably doesn't do Dolby Vision. And I don't know about HLG. If it does do HLG, then I would absolutely do the P-Series. I would fix the P-Series. If it doesn't do HLG, how important is HLG? It's going to become more important It is important now if you have DirecTV in the U.S. or BBC in the U.K. or elsewhere. It's very important and going to become more so. But if you don't have DirecTV in the U.S. or you don't live in the U.K., then it's not that important yet. When will it become important? Hard to say. But because of that number of zones thing, I would be inclined to move towards repairing the P-Series. Lumpy is saying just buy a TLC, actually TCL. TLC is tender loving care, but TCL 65 or 55. Now, you were saying the D-Series you were looking at was like $350. That's like a 43-inch TV. I'm not 100% sure TCL, you know, can you get a bigger one? That would be another reason to maybe buy a newer TV. And certainly TCL would be an excellent alternative. No question. Marsworm says it only does HDR10. Okay. So how important is HLG? Depends. If you have, like I said, if you have DirecTV in the U.S., you know, then it's a little important. Razaria says Massdrop has a drop for the Sony DTS:X soundbar for $600 off the $1,500. Hey, well, there you go. Man, if you can get that Sony ST5000 for $600, holy smokes. Marsworm says the D-Series is 50-inch for $350. Yeah, that's pretty good. I'd look at TCL, too, to tell you the truth. Preface that or modify that by saying that only the 6 Series is FALD, F-A-L-D. And that's their top of the line, which is still very inexpensive as far as TVs go. I would not go below the 6 Series this year. It's the R617, I believe, is the actual model number. And then you put the screen size in front of that. So 55 R617 or whatever. Anything below the 6 Series in TCL will be edge lit. And I do not recommend that. Razarius is asking if I saw Ant-Man movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp, in 2D or 3D. I saw it in 2D at Dolby Cinema, and it looked great. You don't have an Atmos theater near you. I'm sorry to hear that, because the Atmos was great. The sound, the immersive sound all around was really, really good.
Thank you, Scotty. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, you too.
All right.
See you next week.
See you next week. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and impossible game balls. That's what this is. You can't see it, but I'm holding it up. It's a purple ball with the, it's a little bigger than a Penzi pinky. It's a playground ball, though. It's foam. And it's sold exclusively at Apple. And so that tells you it's what? What? Expensive. It's $100. Now, for $0.35, you could get a ball the kids can play with. But that ball would not have an accelerometer in it. It would not have an app. It would not have some goofy battery-powered charging device that you plug in to the pins on the side of the ball. No, it would not have any of that. It wouldn't have batteries at all, would it? It would just be a ball. But this, no, my friends, this can do much more. So I'm being a sucker for anything that Apple sells, I'm setting it up right now. And the very first thing, this always bothers me. The very first thing the app is asking me is how old I am. Why does it care how old I am? Well, there's only one reason I could think of. It cares how old I am because if I'm under 13, it can't collect all the information about me. Right? So then it has to not collect information. And I guess that tells me, and anybody who's paying attention, this app is going to collect information about me. So I can use a dumb ball? All right. So toss the game ball up to move forward. It did. Tap the game ball twice to select. It did. You can always touch to navigate. Okay. Whoa. Ball nav can be turned off in settings. Okay. Now let's learn how the game ball works. I don't know. Is this for the... How high can you toss it? Well, let's see. Oh, I hit the lights. Nice toss. I tossed it 0.3 feet. Okay, that's kind of cool. I don't know if it's $100 worth cool, but it's kind of cool. The impossible ball exclusively at Apple. This is one ball you won't want to lose, right? Don't throw this over the neighbor's fence, kids. The neighbor will probably keep it. Please use the game ball as instructed and have fun. I wonder what would have happened if I'd said I was 12. How this would have been different. So it comes with a bunch of games. There's Impossible, Showdown, Party Time. That's group game ball fun. Oh. There's Sport Labs, Free Play Science Mode, Skyscraper, Toss High and Beat the Clock, Splash, Water Balloon Toss Game, Hot Taters. Oh, Hot Potato Game, Jostle, Keep Away and Duel. Kids probably these days, I'm thinking, the kids these days, they can't play Keep Away without an app telling them what to do. Right? It's an interesting world we live in. I mean, I'm not against it. I'm not against it. I did buy it, didn't I? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line 4, Bruce in Long Island. Hello, Bruce.
Hey there, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm in the market for a new laptop, and I'm not really considering any budget figure, but I run both PC software and Mac software. I do some video editing for my wife's church, so I like to run the Mac software for that.
Yeah.
And I run Quicken for my personal finances and things like that, and there's really not a good Mac version of that, so I use PC for that. So I want to know if I should buy a PC-based laptop and run a Mac VM to run the Mac software, or am I better off buying a Mac and running VM for the PC-based?
Well, this one's easy because there is no way to run Macintosh software in a VM, period. Apple doesn't allow it. So Apple's software is free. Apple makes its money on hardware. So as a result, you can't use, not legally anyway, Apple's software on anything but a Macintosh. And the software checks. There are ways to take PC hardware. And as Apple is kind of increasingly left its hardware behind in the Macintosh world, the Mac Pro, for instance, hasn't been updated since 2013. That's 5 years. So there are a lot of people who try to figure out how to get Mac software working on a PC. They call it a Hackintosh, but it's not a very desirable setup. For one thing, updates become a problem because any update potentially is going to make it unusable again. So in general, my advice always is if you want to run Mac software, you need to get a Mac. The good news is it's easy to run Windows on a Mac because Microsoft makes its living selling software, not hardware. So you can always buy a copy of Windows that you can run in a virtual machine on the Mac, and that's probably the best way to do it.
And that's what I do. That's what I do now.
Yeah.
So
I don't use Parallels or Fusion or what do you use?
Fusion. I use Fusion.
Yeah. So that's
works pretty well.
Yeah, it gives you. And then there's always the, you know, if you really want full speed performance on a Mac for your Windows stuff, you can always use Apple's Boot Camp, which actually turns a Mac into a Windows machine. It separates part of the hard drive out. You install a full version of Windows on that. When you boot up, you can say, I want to boot into Windows. And Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal always used to say the Macintosh is the best Windows machine money can buy. Apple's using the same. This is the irony of it. A Mac is essentially the same components as a PC. I mean, it's an Intel chip, and it's the same kind of RAM, the same kind of video cards. But Apple has its own secret sauce and so forth. The problem, though, buying a Mac today is there really is some question in my mind how committed Apple is to Macintosh. They need it because you can't, you know, their bread and butter these days is the iPhone, but you need a Macintosh to write iPhone software. So they need to keep making the Mac, but they don't seem to really love the Mac. You know, it's like a father who says, I love all my children equally, but you make me all the money. So I really like you a little better. Truthfully, the Mac seems a little bit right. Neglected. We're waiting to see Apple. We thought maybe would update the Macintosh laptops at the June WWDC announcements. They did not. That means almost certainly there'll be an updated Macintosh this fall. Almost, I say, because you can't really be sure. As I said, the Mac Pro, which Apple still sells, is 5 years old. And it wasn't that great then. They updated the iMac last year, but that starts at $5,000, the iMac Pro. That's the newest Macintosh, the most recent update. We really need an update to the rest of the Macs. You'd be fine going out and buying a Mac today because it's not like the next Mac's going to be hugely faster or better. I don't think it will. But honestly, if you could wait till the fall, I might. Are you going to get a desktop or are you going to get a laptop? Do you have a preference?
Yeah, I would prefer a laptop.
Yeah. That adds another complexity because Apple has this Touch Bar, which as far as anybody can tell is completely useless. And they have this new keyboard, which Apple even agrees has problems. And you can't really get away with it unless you buy an app. For some reason, Apple still sells a 15-inch MacBook Pro from 2015. And it's the only one with a decent keyboard. It doesn't have a touch bar, which, I mean, the touch bar isn't a bad thing. It's just not a particularly useful thing. It does add fingerprint login, which I do think is a nice thing to have. But nobody's really developed much software to use the Touch Bar. I didn't like it because I accidentally hit it all the time and things happened that I didn't want to have happen. And so I ended up getting a MacBook Pro without the Touch Bar, but then the keyboard drove me crazy. So today I still use my 2015 MacBook Pro and Apple still sells them, which tells me there's a market for them. Because it has the old keyboard, the old usable keyboard. We're in a bad period right now for a Macintosh, I'm sorry to say. It's my favorite. I prefer it. You might look at editing video on a Windows machine. You can get, I mean, the good news is in the PC marketplace, there's a huge diversity of hardware. Lots of innovation. All sorts of interesting stuff. And if you're not absolutely set on using iMovie or Final Cut Studio, you can always use Adobe's Premiere or Premiere Elements, which runs on Windows, and those are very good, as every bit as good as Apple's product. You just have to learn a little bit of a different way of doing things. Not much. Still timeline-based editing. So it's hard for me these days to recommend a Mac. If you can wait till the fall, let's see if Apple fixes some of these problems. They have to, right? No. I love all my children equally, except for the iPhone, which really makes a lot of money for the company. You're just you love your good little iPhone. You're so much better than your brother, the Macintosh. What has he done lately? 8888 Ask Lee. I'll talk a little bit more after the break, maybe about what's going on with Apple and Macintosh. I love the Mac. I love Mac OS, and I'd far prefer to use it, but I'm just so worried about its future. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, let's see. What is this? Party time, group game ball fun. Compete, complete, and unlock. Complete unique challenges, earning stars for precision, and become the master of game ball. Okay. Complete unique challenges. Shake. No, I don't want to. Oops, I shouldn't have done that. Play. Okay. Jump with my game ball. That's unique. Earn stars based on how well you complete each challenge. Okay. Unlock new stages and worlds when you get the need Adjusted number of stars. Okay. Stage one, 120. Shake? Shake the ball to get 750 points in 12 seconds. Ready? Here we go. This is ridiculous. This is silly. This is stupid. I definitely am an overachiever. Okay. Airtime, level up. Okay, I leveled up. Now what? Airtime is how we measure experience points. Okay. Start at rookie and build to be a Hall of Fame game baller. Okay. Compete with your friends and have fun. Next challenge starts. Toss until you reach exactly 5 feet. I can't. Oh, never mind. Stupid game. Yes, the story of the Macintosh is a bittersweet symphony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Johnny Jett coming up in about 8 minutes, our travel guru. Mike B. in our chat room says, I completely disagree with you, Leo. I love the touch bar and the keyboard doesn't bother me. I'm very happy with my MacBook Pro. And I think I would have to say probably the majority, yes, the majority of MacBook Pro users are fine with it. And it still sells very well, by the way. So if you want a late model Macintosh laptop, you probably should get a MacBook Pro, either the 13-inch or the 15-inch. Get the touch bar. I would probably, if I were you, try the keyboard before you buy it. But the good news is Apple has now said we're going to fix any keyboards that have problems. So you're not going to be stuck with a broken keyboard. Apple will fix it. So maybe that, you know, if you've got to have a Mac, that's the way to go. I can only think that in the fall, Apple will have the butterfly. So there've been two generations of butterfly keys. We're in the second generation. That there'll be butterfly key 3. Apple's not keen on saying we screwed up. Although lately they've been saying it. They said it about the Mac Pro, the Macintosh Pro. They said, you know, that 2013 Mac Pro, we call it the trash can Mac. It's a little black, shiny little black cylinder. They said, yeah, we over-designed it. Wow, to hear Apple say that. Whew. We over-designed it, and we painted ourselves into a corner. It looks good, right? But it's because of thermal limitations, just not upgradable. We can't put newer chips in it, period. So they said, and they said this last year, they said in 2017, they said, we're going to make a new Mac Pro, the high-end Mac for people who want a modular high-end Mac, but it's going to take us a while. It won't be out in 2017. It won't be out in 2018. Maybe it'll be out in 2019. Maybe not. I would, if I were a betting man, I'd bet 2019. Next year. And I don't know what they're going to do to change it, but they have to make it more upgradable, more modular, for sure. Part of the problem is also Intel. Let's be honest. Intel has not done a lot to make its chips faster over the last few generations. We're in the 8th generation of Intel's processors, the i3, 5, and 7. And now there's an i9. And they have had difficulty making them faster. And in fact, it turns out that something they started doing in 1995, what is that, 23 years ago, was a big mistake. They started using something called speculative execution, where the processor kind of guesses where you're going with this. Let me guess. I think I know where you're going with this. And it speeds up processing a lot, but it has a fundamental flaw that even in 1995, Intel knew about but decided to kind of ignore, which is that speculative execution sometimes can leak information. So if you have another process running on that chip, it can see what it's the other one's doing. You can see what you're up to. Not a big deal on your machine unless you get some malware on there. A big deal, though, on shared machines, machines on servers and stuff where you might have a malicious actor using the same processor as you trying to snoop into what you're doing, including passwords and things. And so this is the Spectre and Meltdown flaws you might have heard about. And so Intel's got a little problem because they can't, if they take out speculative execution, their processors are dog slow. It, by the way, Intel was so successful with this that AMD and ARM followed suit. So all of them have, to some degree or another, this same problem. So that's one problem Intel's figuring out. Gosh, we don't want to, our processors aren't getting much faster as it is. We've kind of hit Moore's Law, the end of Moore's Law. And now we have to slow them down because of this security flaw. I think Intel's in trouble, to be honest with you. And even Apple has started to make noises about abandoning Intel chips. And it seems pretty clear from Apple's announcements that maybe not this next year, but in years to come, maybe in a few years, Macintoshes won't run Intel chips. They'll run Apple design chips, just like their phones and their tablets. Apple's chips are pretty impressive, especially since they're designed specifically for the hardware. You know, they don't have to be generic like Intel chips do. Intel chips run so much different hardware that, you know, they can't optimize them for the specifics, but Apple can. That's why you have such a fast processor in your iPhone, faster than anything else out there, because it's designed specifically for the iPhone. So Apple says, you know, well, this would work on the desktop too. I think that's one of the reasons maybe Macintosh hasn't moved forward too fast, is they're working very hard on this instead. But that's a few years off. I don't see, frankly, big developments in the Macintosh world for the next couple of years. And that's sad because I think macOS is a very good operating system. But I don't think Apple's keeping up with the hardware. And then you look on the Windows side and you see, oh my goodness, all different companies like Dell and Lenovo and HP just doing all sorts of great innovative things, Acer and Asus, really interesting different kinds of things. And you say, boy, it's too bad all that stuff runs Windows. At least that's what I say. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to take a little break. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up to help us travel better with technology. And then we'll get back to the phones. There is a website if you want to follow along on the web, techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign up. Everything we talk about is there. You can search. We've got a good search. Find out what I've said about any particular thing over the last 15 years. techguylabs.com. The Tech Guy Podcast today brought to you by our longtime sponsor, great folks at Quicken Loans, who give you, you know, Rocket Mortgage. I talk about that all the time. The easy-to-use mortgage approval process is entirely online. They've added a new feature I think is really important. As interest rates are starting to ratchet up, they're unpredictable, right? And if you're shopping for a house, you'd like to get locked in, wouldn't you? Well, now you can with Rocket Mortgage. No more of that anxiety over rising interest rates. The folks at Quicken Loans have done something about it. They're calling it the power buying process. And let me tell you how it works. Quicken Loans, as always, with Rocket Mortgage, will verify your income, assets, and credit. Less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. Now, that's nice because that's like being a cash buyer. You're good for it. So when you go and make an offer on a house, the seller and their realtor know, oh, no, they're good for the loan. The problem is, if you're in the shopping process, do you want, you know, what's going to happen to interest rates? Are they going to go up? Once you're verified with the power buying process, you qualify for Quicken Loans' all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock, this is so cool, they lock up your rate for 90 days while you shop, giving you plenty of time to find that house. If the rates go up, no problem, your rate does not. It stays the same. Even better, if the rates go down, your rate goes down with it. Either way, it's a win, right? It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest and best mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval is only valid in certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. We thank Quicken Loans for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. He's been everywhere, man. He's breathed the mountain air. He's crossed the desert spare. You know who I'm talking about. Johnny Jett. Now, were the deserts bare or were you bare, Johnny, when you crossed them? That's what I want to know. Johnny, no, I'm sorry. I forget I mentioned it. JohnnyJet.com. He is our travel guru, helps us use technology to travel better. And he's finally, after how long have you been away now? He's finally home.
I mean, I came home for one night 3 weeks ago, but my wife and son have been away for 6 weeks. So we're back.
Wow.
But we leave again this week and for a big trip.
Oh,
pretty big. I mean, not.
Now, when Johnny and company travel, where do you go on vacation?
We don't really go on vacation, you know.
Your whole life is a vacation.
Well, fortunately, my job allows me to travel. So when we go on vacation, we go home. But, you know, I'm fortunate to be able to, you know, work and have fun at the same time. I love what I do. And, you know, it's trying not to bad. Get people to travel better, cheaper, and safer. And
not a bad
life. That's how I do it.
Well, do it now. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, last week I left off. I think I was in Connecticut or New York City. We flew in from New York.
He doesn't even know, folks.
Well, when I called in.
I think you're in Connecticut. You were looking out at the ocean.
Okay, so we went to New York for a few nights after that and had a great time. And so to come back to L.A., you know, we flew the day after July 4th, July 5th, Independence Day. So we flew July 5th and we took the 6 a.m. flight because I was able to use my miles for my wife. 32,000 miles for business class, and they've never, American Airlines never opens it up for that cheap. Sometimes it's 80,000 miles. So, you know, you pick flights that business travelers don't want to be on, and none of them want to be on, you know, an early morning flight right after a holiday. And so I was able to buy it, and I was able to buy a business class ticket for $500 on the, you know, coveted New York LA flight, which is lie flat seats, and it makes it so much easier to travel. But, you know, we had to wake up super early, and that's why my friends always call me Johnny Jetlag. That's one of the nicknames. Yes. And I'm jetlagged right now, I'll be honest. And so I have an app. It's called Time Shifter.
Ah.
Have you heard of this one?
No.
So it's on – actually, I just tweeted it. I tagged you in my scheduled tweet, and so you should be able to see it there. But it's on iOS and Android. This one's not free, but it was developed by a Harvard Medical School associate.
So is this a jet lag cure? Because I could use one.
I mean, supposedly, I don't really believe that there's a cure, but I'm willing to try pretty much anything. I know what works for me. So when I fly, you know, let's say if I go LA to Asia or Australia, I know, you know, you arrive at 7 a.m. in the morning usually, and I know I'm going to be jet lagged. Yeah. So I try not to take a nap, and if I do, I take a really short one, and I try to do it outside on a park bench for like 10 minutes, or I don't go underneath my covers. And just try and get on local time as soon as possible. And I think this app, you know, it tells you what are the best times.
It helps you do it.
Exactly.
It guides you to the right things to do.
Right. And they have individual plans. You can have, you know, one trip for $4, $5, $4.99.
Oh, you pay by the trip?
You could. Or you could do an annual subscription for $25, $24.99.
You know what? If it helped with jet lag, it'd be worth it. Now, do you notice the jet lag since you... Johnny Jetlag, since it's your name, is worse when you're heading into the sun, when you're heading east, or is it worse when you're traveling with the sun heading west?
No, I think it's, you know, easier going west. You know, New York, L.A., it's much better when I get to L.A. I get up super early. I'm so productive. The day, especially when you get on a 6 a.m. flight, you land at 9 a.m., and it's like feels like the longest day of the year, but you're so productive. On the other way, you leave. Let's say I leave L.A. at 6 a.m. I get into New York around 3 p.m. And, you know, your day's already shot. And then by the time you wake up the next morning, you know, you're waking up at – let's say you wake up at 7 a.m. like I do, and it's really 10 a.m. over there.
Yeah.
And so, my God, I'm done.
Yeah.
So for most people, it's easier going west. And I'm
with you on that. When we went to Japan, we were all ready for – big time jet lag because it's a huge time difference. Yeah. And we recovered quickly. In a day or two, we felt fine. But then coming home, heading east, took us like a month to get totally normal.
So this guy actually, he claims he's worked with big time celebrities, even astronauts on how to cure it. He gives these plans. You know, you have to answer some questions like, you know, where you're going, the times you're you eat and things like that. And so they have all different things. I usually start getting prepared the day or two before. So if I'm in LA and I'm going to Europe, I'll try to go to bed much earlier than I normally do just to get on that schedule. And I'll eat. And when I get on the plane, I set my watch, although I don't use a watch anymore, but I used to. I would set my watch to whatever the local time is. And yeah. I would try to eat and sleep whatever those whatever times you're going to. And right. just stick to it. And if you can fight the first night, the hardest night is the first night, I think.
Yeah.
But if you can avoid taking a long nap and getting messed up, but everyone's different, and that's at least for me. And so anyway, I'm willing to try this app. It's $4.99.
Try it for one trip, right? Why not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and also, sunlight is basically jet lag's kryptonite. So. If you're going, like, if I'm in Sydney, I'll go for a walk around the harbor, the, you know, the botanical gardens, and just soak in that sun, because it will definitely.
That's a nice thing to do anyway, just a nice thing. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Love
and don't fight it. I learned not to fight the jet lag. So instead of waking up in the middle of the night and just counting sheep like I used to, I now go to work for 3 hours in the middle of the night. And then I'll go back to sleep for a couple hours.
Somebody, a very kind listener, once sent me a book, very hard, rare to find book, that prescribed diet and all sorts of changes. Like 2 weeks beforehand, you have to reduce your carbs and all these weird things. And I figure if you do all that, maybe it would work. But it would just seem like too much work for me to do all that. So I just decided I'll be sleepy for a while. You know, I'll be like the zombie, the walking dead for a few days. Big deal.
And plus, when you get on the plane, they're going to, you know, fill you up with carbs and salty food.
Well, that's
food.
The thing. The plane doesn't pay attention to the time zone. It's just, well, we're flying at night, so I guess it's nighttime. We'll wake you up at breakfast time, and it's just not – that's not – doesn't work so well.
And most people just eat because they're bored.
I eat and sleep on a plane. What else is there going to – what else are you going to do?
No, the tip is you know, eat before you get on the plane and then tell the flight attendants, your seatmate, or even wear a mask that says, don't wake me up. You know, because that drives me nuts when a flight attendant will come by and say, would you like your meal when you're sleeping? And I'm like, right. No, now I can't go back to sleep.
Lately, they've been saying ahead of time, should we wake you up? And I like that. No, you can say
I
no.
I do too. Yeah. But they don't do that in coach. So
yeah, there you go. Maybe that's why it's been happening lately.
I got a game. I just heard you say you're going to play some games in your next
yes.
show.
Yes.
So have you ever heard of Akinator? Akinator.
No.
Okay, this has been around for a while, and it's in like 10 different languages. So this will blow your mind away. So if you're ever in a long line waiting to get on a plane, or you're on a plane, or you're at a
– Can you play this on the plane? Because I could use
– Well, it needs Wi-Fi. It does require Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But if you just pick the most obscure real or fictional character and answer their questions, and they'll guess it. So I guessed – you know, mine was Chewbacca, and he got it right away. And Natalie did these –
it's like 20 questions.
There's like 10 questions, yeah.
But I mean, it's like the game 20 questions.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But just do it during the next commercial and it will blow your mind.
He's like a genie.
He is a genie. He's a genie Akinator.
Oh.
And it's a French company. And although I did do Fozzie Bear, as you can tell, I have a 2-year-old.
Yeah. It's
and
French.
He got that one wrong. He got the Fozzie Bear
it's
wrong.
It's French. You didn't know from Fozzie Bear. If you did Tintin.
Actually,
maybe.
Yes, he was.
Tintin. If you but asterisk.
You can play online or I don't actually even know if there's an app. But
there is an app. There's an iOS app called Akinator from Elo.
So that is it. But you can do it online, akinator.com.
Johnny Jett, you're a great way to pass the time. Someday I'd like to travel with you and just watch what you do. You'll find all of Johnny's great tips, all of the information he talks about, not only on our website, but also on his. In fact, while you're there, subscribe to his travel newsletter, johnnyjett.com. Johnny, safe travels. We'll see you next week. So how long are you going to be home for?
A few more hours.
What? Wait a minute. And then you're going on this big family trip?
Yeah, I think you'll be jealous of the.
I'm already. Next week. You're going to Bali or somewhere. You're going to the Maldives or the Seychelles So it's a family trip. You're bringing Jack and Natalie.
Jack almost comes with me.
He's a traveling. He's a traveling kid. Yeah, so how long are you going to be gone for in this one?
Not that long.
Oh, but this is the one you were talking about.
Yep. I mean, I got a bunch of trips coming up.
Of course you do. You're Johnny Jett. You know, I thought when you had a baby, you might settle down. You might get, you know, be more of a homebody. And you were for about a month.
No, about 8 months. I took some time off.
Eight months. That's good.
But, you know, I had to pick it up. I used to go to 20 countries a year before I had a baby.
That's how you make a living. You got to do it. You got to do it. You can't sit back, relax, no. Enjoy the ride. No.
Get some house sitters and
do you use house sitters?
Sometimes, and we have a really good alarm system, and we live in a community.
But you don't have pets. Everybody.
No.
See, that's the smart thing. We got two cats. No matter what we do, we're screwed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. John in Oxnard, California. Thanks for hanging on. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hey.
Interesting talks. I think if you move that Apple Newton just a few inches to the left, you can put the Apple Game Ball up in your antique shelf.
Yeah, it belongs right next to the Newton, doesn't it? Yeah, it's not from Apple, but Apple has the exclusive rights to sell it. But $100 to play games. I don't know. You know, I got it so I could review it so I could save you the money. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And I bet you do have a Newton, don't you?
You know, I'm looking at my shelf. I've got at least two behind me right now. Yeah, as a matter of fact. There's that old joke. How many Newtons does it take to screw in a light bulb? Farm.
Yeah. Here, interesting talk about the Macs.
No one gets that joke. Yes, sir.
A friend of mine that I'd known for many years guided the launch of one of the Macs way back in the early
really?
Days.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Campbell.
Oh, Bill Campbell's
you
legendary.
Bill Campbell?
Coach.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. You were friends with Coach?
Yeah, I knew him since he was a coach at Boston College.
Yeah, they all called him Coach. He was really quite a legend and a very big influence on Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Bill was one of the greats. I think, you know, it's funny because his name is not that well known, I think, except people who follow this, but in the general public. But and yet he deserves to be so much better known, I think.
Oh, yeah.
To some degree, you might give Coach credit for the new jobs, the new and improved jobs. Because Steve, you know, one of the reasons he got fired from Apple was he just was very hard to work with and, you know, he made it difficult on employees, and I think Coach helped him a lot in becoming a better leader. At least that's what I hear. So,
well, if you looked at the Apple Board of Directors, there was Steve Jobs, and then Bill's name was right after his.
Right up there. Absolutely. Deserves to be better known. Well, thank you for reminding us about Coach.
Yeah. Anyway, I had Spectrum. I upgraded my internet service to a faster speed, and my iPads, my iPhone, everything I have, the laptops, they all get the 5G, which is supposed to be faster, and yet I have a Sony with an i7. It was one of the last Sony's BIOS that they had, and it only allows me to the only option as far as networks is the 2G. Is there something in the computer, or was there a certain year or cutoff point where 2G was all computer?
Yes. So we're talking about Wi-Fi, and the G in this case is gigahertz. It's the radio band that it can access. Originally, Wi-Fi 802.11b, the first Wi-Fi, was on the 2.4 gigahertz band. This was an unregulated band. The FCC said anybody can use it. And actually, that was a good thing. That lack of regulation meant that people were trying all sorts of stuff, not just Wi-Fi, baby monitors, microwave ovens, smartphones, all sorts of stuff. Maybe if you had a cordless phone, you might have had that on 2.4 gigahertz. Later, and I think it was 802.11n that Wi-Fi started also using. It still uses 2.4, but also using 5 gigahertz. Not 5G, and that's a little confusing. When you talk about 5G, you might be thinking of that's the future of cell phone data, but that's not out for another year or two. You were talking about it's 5 gigahertz or 5 GHz, and that's absolutely right. Although any Wi-Fi access point that does 5 gigahertz will probably also do 2 gigahertz. Sometimes you'll see on the box dual band or tri-band. That's what that means. The dual bands are 2.4 and 5. Tri-bands are 1, 2.4, and 2 bands within the 5 gigahertz range. Your older devices, if they're pretty old, I mean, they'll have to be 802.11b, maybe G. I don't remember if A, this is the order they came out in. But anything after, anything N or later, 802.11N or later would have a 5 gigahertz range. But I do all the time see Internet of Things devices that they've cheaped out on the radio that won't do 5 gigahertz. That's not at all unusual.
Oh, okay.
So if it's an Internet of Things device, you want to make sure that you pick the 2.4 gigahertz band. This is a little complicated because sometimes they're not labeled as to the frequency, and it's easy to accidentally pick the wrong Wi-Fi channel on an Internet of Things device. But an older laptop, how old is it?
Well, when did Sony discontinue the BIOS? Maybe 3 years ago or something like that, or is it longer?
I'd be surprised if it didn't support 5 gigahertz, but you can look in the software. It should tell you in the settings. And it may be that the 5 gigahertz radio is turned off. It's a separate radio. So you have to look at the hardware capabilities and the software capabilities and see if it can do 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. 2.4 has advantages. It spreads better. The lower the frequency, the better it goes through walls. 5 has limitations. It can easily be stopped by walls. That's not necessarily a bad thing because it means that you're not going to have as much interference in the 5 gigahertz range as long as you kind of have line of sight between the device and your access point. So 2.4 gigahertz has other disadvantages because it's been around for a long time and it's an unregulated frequency. There's all sorts of stuff on it, so there's often more interference. If you can turn on 5 on your device and let it choose, that's the best. There's very little to be gained by manually choosing the frequency, or within the frequency, you have different bands. They call them channels. Very little to be gained by manually doing that. Almost all modern Wi-Fi software does the best figuring out what to do. So I'd let the software do it. Just make sure it's all enabled on your device. Line 2, Brian Indio. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leah. How are you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you today?
Well, I understand you've had your fire cube for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
Have you developed any?
I like it. So if you're used to an Amazon Fire TV, you'll already understand the software on the cube. It's the same as any Fire TV, but it's a little different in the sense it's a cube and it has built-in Amazon Echo, and the Echo will control the TV, turn on the TV, turn it off, because the cube has an infrared beam on all four sides of it. I can go into my den, which is where I have it installed, and say, turn on the TV, or I could say, let's watch the World Cup, and it knows where to go, and all of that using Echo. Now, it is limited in the sense that it's really for use, like the Fire TV is your primary device. It doesn't control a Roku. It doesn't control an Apple TV. If you use those, you can use something like the Harmony Hub and use Amazon Echo with those. So if voice control is what you're looking for, it works. It's pretty good. It has all the limitations of an Amazon Echo, but it works pretty well. I like it a lot. Recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones, we talk about smart watches, we talk about augmented reality, anything with a chip in it. If it's impossible balls with, this is that crazy $100 ball Apple's selling, anything with it, this has a chip in it, anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. I'd love to talk to you. Let's talk high tech. 888-827-5536. On we go to Mike in Huntington Beach, California. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I don't know if your assistant informed you as to what my call is about, but I'm a real estate agent in Huntington Beach, a broker. And
nice.
I
want to get one of those houses on the ocean. Are those really expensive down there?
They're not bad. In fact, I'm living on the water right now.
That's where I want to be. And then you have this great farmer's market there. I love Huntington Beach.
We have the best climate in the world.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. All right. You're really sold.
Spoiled. Anyway.
I'll be right there.
We have our open houses. We try to create a mood.
Sure.
By having nice music.
Do you bake bread and have cookies and...
You bet. You the whole is an enchilada.
Maybe mull a little apple cider.
Yeah. You know, in the evening we do wine. We do all
nice.
Kinds of things.
Very smart.
We make it a great experience.
Very smart.
But music is part of it. And unfortunately, I've been carrying around one of the old boom boxes, a little CD player with the detachable speakers. And I want to step up into technology and be able to use the wireless speakers that I can place in different rooms in the house, including the backyard. And I tried to research those myself, and I got totally confused as to what they can and can't do.
So, yeah, let me explain what you want to do and why you've got it's technically a little difficult. So if you were to, say, get a bunch of Bluetooth speakers and put them in every room and then control it with your iPhone, I mean, there is the basic issue of having the iPhone control multiple speakers, but let's put that aside. The big issue, right. The bigger issue would be they wouldn't be in sync. And even if they're all playing the same music, one might be a half second behind the other, and it would make basically an echo chamber. It would sound horrible.
Oh, wow.
So this is where a company that's just doing their IPO right now, just up the way from you in Santa Barbara, Sonos, was the first to do this right. They have what you're looking for is multi-room sound. And if money were no object, you could put, in fact, I bet you a lot of your buyers end up putting Sonos in their house. So they're completely wireless. They do have to have internet access. And you could put one in each room. And they have this, they were the first to do this amazing party mode where they can all be playing the same beautiful music in perfect synchronization. So as you move from room to room, it feels like the whole house has music, and there's no discernible difference from one room to the other, which is, I know, exactly what you're looking for. Yeah, but it's way too expensive, and there's other issues. It's really designed for a kind of a more permanent. You want something you could just bring to the house and set up. So there are a number of ways to do multi-room audio. The good news is this has been solved. Sonos did it, and for a long time was the only company that did it. But now there are many other companies that do it. And there are even, and I think this is the solution you want, there are even portable Bluetooth speakers that will do it. So, because that's what you really want. You want to go in there, you have the music on your phone, I presume, right?
Correct.
And you want to just, you know, as you get in the house ready for the open house, put a little speaker in each room, and then on your phone you go boom, 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 and let's play a little Paco Bell's Canon and D, and you got it going through the whole house. And that is now doable, thank goodness, because this technology has been figured out. The one I'd probably recommend is one I use is from a company you probably have heard of called Bang & Olufsen. They're very well known for high-end audio.
They're an old brand, yeah.
B&O. But they make something called the BO Link. Actually, I have one. I happen to have one right here.
pull it out. Called a BO? Can you spell that?
B-E-O. B-E-O Link. And they're little blue. They have a variety of sizes, but they're little Bluetooth speakers. And what happens is you have the BO Link app on your phone, and that controls them. And they support multi-room, and that's the key. You always want to look for multi-room. That's the ability to play the same thing on multiple speakers throughout the house. And the nice thing about these BO Links, they're not hugely expensive. You use the BO Music app to control it. And you could have in the living room, you could have a bigger speaker that had a more full sound. And in the bathroom, you could have a smaller speaker. I carry a BO Link speaker with me all the time. As I travel, because I love when I get to a hotel room, I take the speaker out. It's battery powered, by the way, so you charge it up and it'll last all day. I put it in the room and I listen to music and my books and stuff like that.
They're rechargeable?
They're rechargeable, yeah.
Okay, is there a limit in terms of how many, and how about the distance between the speaker and the source, the phone?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's a limit, but you can research it. There are a variety of different sizes. I think they have 8 different speakers in this line. Everything from a little portable that the BO Play A2, which I carry around in my briefcase, it's that small, to the big. They have a 240 watt speaker that's enough to fill a room. They range in price from, I think, $100 to several hundred dollars, depending on how big you want it to be. I don't know the limit. I don't know. I'd have to. You could probably look on the website. Go to BEOPLAY, and you control it with the app. But you can also, as long as you're searching the web, if you look for multi-room audio, you'll see there are many choices. You know, Google can do it with its Google Homes. Problem with that is you have to set up a Wi-Fi network.
You can't do, right?
Yeah. So you want, what you want is Bluetooth speakers that will do this.
Mm-hmm. And, you said BEOPLAY?
BEOPLAY. BEOPLAY.
Oh, play. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Just like playing music.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I really like my BEOPLAYs. I think that's been a very good choice for me, and they now have multi-room sound. The way they do it, you can't just play it by Bluetooth, and because Bluetooth takes a while, and there's latency, and each speaker will be playing slightly different time. So what they do is they essentially send out a time code, and they say this is, start the music at this time code. They send that out, and they're able to synchronize up. That's, you know, Sonos did it by having a separate network. But the Sonoses need Wi-Fi. They need connection to the internet. They're not that portable. So I think the BEOPLAY from Bang & Olufsen is probably the best choice for this. That would be nice. Set up a nice setup. BEOPLAY.com. We'll put a link in the show notes at thetechguylabs.com. Chat room is, somebody's saying you could set up a hotspot and connect the Google Homes. I think that's more work than you'd really want. I think this is probably the right solution. They've really kind of been fairly clever of this. They say 15 hours of playtime for the P6, more than enough for an open house. 8888 Ask Leo. Now, the nice thing about this is if you have a experience with any of this stuff, you can also try it. Call in or, 8888 Ask Leo, or go to our website, techguylabs.com, and add your 2 cents, because I want to hear from everybody. So if you've got a solution, if there's something you use, if you've tried the BEOPLAY and you say, nah, you know, those aren't very good, I use them. But if you have an opinion, this is where you do it, techguylabs.com, or you can call. The website allows you to make comments, which is very handy, I think. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number, as I said, techguylabs.com, the website. There's one more way you can yell at me or help me, depending on your point of view, in our website, our chat room, irc.twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Or should I say, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo, 8888, Ask Leo. Back to the phones to go. Line 4, Sue in O'Fallon, Illinois. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call again.
Uh-oh. I hope I didn't screw it up last time.
Oh, no. Well, it's really funny because I asked about a referral for a television because ours was acting up, and our TV must have heard me talking to you because it quit acting up.
Don't replace me. I'll be all right. I'll be good from now on.
Please don't.
Oh, I'll be good from now on.
My question today is, I took your advice and I ordered a Lenovo ThinkPad Chromebook.
You're going to love that. Good choice.
No, it's very hard because after 22 years of Windows, it's very strange.
What is it that bothers you the most?
Not knowing where anything is, but I'm getting used to it because we've always gotten used to the fact that all the information, all of our files, everything was right here on this piece of hardware, but it's not there.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
No, it's in the cloud. It's in that puffy little thing in the sky, the cloud.
Yeah, and that's very odd. You know, it's just kind of, I'm finding my way around. But my question is, when I boot it up, when I press the button, it's got the solid state hard drive, so it's on. But it asks for my password every single time.
Yeah.
Is there any way to get around that, or is that
No, you
the
can.
Way it is?
That is annoying because I hope you have a very. It's asking for your Google password, and I hope you have a very long, strong, difficult to type Google password. But the problem with that, of course, is that every time you turn the thing on, you got to give it the long, strong Google password. That's a pain in the butt,
right.
Isn't it? So there is a way, and I'm turning on my Chromebook right now so I can help you with this.
I don't have mine like
all right, because but it's in the settings.
We're leaving for vacation tomorrow. Yeah. Going to take it with us, and I don't have it here.
It's in the settings. You can turn on a PIN. That can be just a few digits that you entered, much like Microsoft Office. The reason, though, that it does have that, wants that pass, that Google password, is because it's the key to everything. You know, all your stuff is in the cloud, and it's protected by the Google password. So you don't want just anybody using your Chromebook and getting your stuff. But because they understand it's kind of a pain, they will let you use the PIN most of the time. Every once in a while, though, you will have to re-enter your Google password just to protect it. So I understand that. I have some issues with that as well. But there are good reasons nowadays to make sure that nobody can just turn on your computer and access.
Well, of course, if that's where a lot of people do everything, I don't. Everything else is, I've got two PCs and two other laptops, and they're all Windows. But that one I wanted just because you recommended it, and the solid state hard drive and all that. It's very, very fast, and I just am annoyed that every time I turn it on, I have to type that in. So
there may
I can
be
go into settings and just put a four-digit PIN?
I can't remember. Mine is seven digits because I use a phone number because it's easy for me to remember because I've already memorized it. But I can't remember how many digits. Probably is four to seven, something like that. And that one is easy to enter really quickly. There is, as far as I know, no reason or no way to turn off passwords entirely, which is what it sounds like you'd like to do. And I guess
I have it written down and it's tucked in the laptop, so when I open it up, there's the password.
Yeah, that's not real secure either, is it? Yeah, use the PIN.
No, it's not.
But you'll still have to use the problem with the PIN, and that's how I do it, but unfortunately, you still have to enter your Google password every once in a while. So I think that is a disadvantage. That is a new way of thinking about computing. It is, however, the recommendation that everybody gives, not just, by the way, not just for your laptops, but for your phone as well. Do you have to unlock your phone or no?
No, and that is another question. Why do we have now? I don't do a lot on my phone. I make calls and I do texts. I don't do a lot with it. And it's an older phone. It's don't please scream at me. It's an Android 4 something series. So I know it's old. There's no security on it as far as I know. I don't update anything for security. But I don't use that phone for anything that I would think would need security.
Yeah. Except that you use it for email. It knows where you don't ever use email on it.
No. I use it to make calls and to text. And if I take a picture with the phone, I'll send it, but that's through texting. So
you make a good argument that you don't need security. The world as it's currently configured just wants everybody to be secure. Everybody should be entering passwords to unlock the phone. Everybody should be entering passwords to open your laptop. And I can understand what you're saying I don't need that because there's nothing on there. You know, you can configure a Windows machine not to have a password. You can, I think, configure a Macintosh not to have a password. But Chrome OS is more modern, and they really do require at least a PIN. The phone, right now, you have an older phone that doesn't require a password. If you bought a new phone, almost all the new phones require a password as well. And it's just the feeling is... Now, the problem with this is when you require a password and when you require people to enter it a lot, what they tend to do is make them simple, easy to guess passwords because they're easy to enter. And that's worse security in some ways, right? So,
right. I had to call AT&T today. I got a text message, and it looked like it was from AT&T, but you know how anybody can send anything to you. So I called AT&T. This thing was asking me to go to this number and register my account.
You are so smart that you did not fall for that.
I called AT&T, and the guy said, no, we didn't send that to you.
Yep. So you kind of get an idea, Sue, of we're living in a world that is more hostile, and there are more adversaries. And so the general default for almost everything now is exactly this, passwords. And I'm so glad that you had the good sense not to give them any information.
Well, it's because I listen to you, and because of that, when IRS calls us and tell us they're going to come arrest
Yay.
Us.
That's right.
Because we owe them so much money.
I get that one all the time. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yes, it is.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just don't know what the solution is for you. I mean, I want to be pragmatic, so I don't want to say, oh, you got to have a password. Not everybody needs a password. I would say, Sue, that maybe you should think about, are you sure there's nothing on that phone that you wouldn't want somebody to get access to?
My other contacts, their phone numbers.
Yeah, that's not such a big deal. You don't have passwords stored on that phone that you log into stuff with, like your bank or.
I don't do anything on the phone but talk and text.
Then you know what?
I know
you're
I'm
fine.
Old-fashioned.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually a very good security policy. And in this case, the fact that it's an older phone with security issues doesn't make any difference. I mean, the phone does know things like location information. So, you know, if somebody were trying to follow you around, they could use it for that.
I turned that off.
Oh, man, you're good.
Well.
You're good. So if you lost that phone, there would be nothing on there that somebody could say, well.
No.
No. That's good.
No. No, but I'm just old-fashioned. It's a phone.
Yeah.
But I do text on it.
Yeah. And as long as that's all you ever do is phone calls and text, you're all right. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry about it. If you start getting email, well, then you want to protect that, right?
Well, I don't know where this text came from this. I read the...
Oh, they just make up phone numbers. Anybody can... I get texts. Because I have a French last name, I get a lot of texts from people claiming to be cute young girls in France. And they text me in French. And I go, yeah, no, I know you're... First of all, you're probably a guy named Boris. And I'm not answering that one. But that's because any phone number can be spoofed, right? So it's not a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just random junk. It's spam. It's spam. I don't know what the solution is to the Chromebook. I would say you could use the PIN. There is a stronger argument because you're storing documents and so forth, not on the book, but on your Google account. And so access to the book gives them access to your Google account.
But I don't use Google as my email. So.
Right. I don't either for that reason. Yeah.
When we travel, I can log in to charter.net and get, you know, go into my server through them. That might be an issue.
Only if you store that password or if you let Chrome remember that password. But if you enter it by hand every time, no.
Yeah.
Alrighty. There's no way that I know of to turn off the password on a Chromebook. That, you know, you've actually hit on probably the biggest negative.
Well, that answers why I haven't been able to find it anywhere on the net.
Yeah. There is, in the settings, there is a way to use a PIN instead.
All right.
Uh-huh. And I don't know if that Lenovo has a fingerprint reader, but if it did, you could use a fingerprint reader.
No.
Which is, by the way, the best, that's kind of the best of both worlds because it's secure, but it's fast and easy and you don't have to remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
Golly, I think you've made a good argument, frankly.
Well, it's a safety thing. I understand. And like I said, but my thing is that, well, I just had the number written down. So when I open it up, there it is, and I don't forget it. It's right there.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of encourage you to use easy passwords, which is not a good... That's not a good encouragement either.
No.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in.
You got me. You got me, Susie. You came up with a reason not to use a Chromebook.
Did I win a prize?
You win a prize. You win my eternal gratitude. Windows and Mac both will let you not have a password. I would suggest that you would want one at least on a laptop for sure. So it's just because you're carrying it around, if it got lost, people would then have access to everything on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know.
Thank you,
Sue.
I appreciate your knowledge.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
I'm glad your TV works.
Yeah, me too. Saved us a bunch of money.
Good. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Boy, 8888 Ask Leo. Sue really posed a conundrum. Does everybody always need to have a secure system? And I guess if you have the discipline never to use your system for anything that you need to keep secure, no. But in this modern world, it's always presumed that you're putting everything on your phone or your laptop. And so the default status, default stature is let's protect it with a password. If you get a new iPhone, they're going to make you set up at least a 6-digit passcode. Face ID, too. I recommend using a stronger one because, I mean, your phone, everything's on there. Everything's on there. You got my phone. If I didn't lock it down, you could send money with Venmo. You could send texts to strangers. You could do all sorts of things. 8888 Ask Leo. You can always use a Chromebook as a guest, Dr. Mom's reminding me. And that's true, although it's kind of a painful way to use a Chromebook. No passwords required for the guest, but as soon as you stop using it, you shut it down, you log out, it erases everything, you start over again. And that is exact illustration of Google's thinking here. Well, as long as there's nothing personal and private on the Chromebook, you don't need a password. So if you use it as a guest, it erases the entire session, starts over fresh. But maybe that's the solution. Just use it as a guest. You're right, Dr. Mom. That would do the job. Gary in Wekiwatchee, Florida. Is that right? Am I saying it right? Wekiwatchee?
You certainly are, yes.
That's because Kim spelled it phonetically for me. Hi, Gary.
It's an old Indian name. It means winding river. And it's an old Florida. There's a spring there that they have mermaids. That there's a show. And they've done it since the late 40s. And it's still the same. It's old Florida.
I love old Florida. I love that. Oh, I'll have to come down to Wekiwatchee.
It's 40 miles north of Tampa, St. Pete. So
nice.
It's not that far. Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, okay, here's my issue. I'm not technically real savvy, but I'm not a novice either. I live in Florida, and my mom, who has severe dementia, and my brother, who is, I would say, totally blind, but he has some slight vision. He used to be able to use a computer. He can't use it anymore. And watching television, I mean, he just listens to it for sound. My mother likes the game show network and local news, so they use TV very little. And their cable company has gone all digital, so they have to convert. All the analog TVs are no good anymore. And
what a pain.
My brother's kind of cheap. He doesn't want to have boxes for all the TVs he's got. So we're going to have one box with the cable. They've got internet. I need something to hook up for him so he can use voice commands to control his TV. He has stocks, so he likes listening to CNBC for the stock trail.
He'd ideally to say, turn on CNBC, and it would just go there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought Roku would work, but I got Roku, and you need a visual menu to kind of scroll.
That's right.
The way he uses the cable boxes for my mom is he knows what numbers to punch in for her TV shows, and that's it. So he turns it on and turns it off, and he's got old analog TVs he's still using for the other ones. So
we were talking earlier about the Fire Cube. This is a...
Okay, I wasn't listening, but...
I heard
you talk during the break.
So this is Amazon's Fire TV built into a cube that can control a TV, a receiver if you've got one, and some, but not all, cable boxes. So... If it worked with your particular cable box, this would do exactly that.
Okay, Fire Cube. Okay.
Fire Cube. It's $119. There are other ways to do it as well. You're going to use a voice assistant, whether it's Amazon's Echo or Google's Home.
Yep. Well, he's got. I've already ordered that. I'm going up later this summer. I've already ordered a he wanted a Google, so I got a mini assistant, and I got the Chrome.
So the Chromecast will also do that, but it's going to be a little bit more.
See, then I realized after you need a tablet or a cell phone to control change the channels or something. I thought that's what it said, but
yeah, Chromecast probably isn't ideal for that because Okay. Yeah.
Well, there's gonna be a spare TV my wife and I will use. I'll use all that there.
You can. There are some limitations, but you can speak to the Google Assistant and tell it to turn on the TV.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if you could tell it to turn on CNBC. I think you only could if you subscribed to YouTube's TV service, which is $35 or maybe $40 now a month.
Yes, he doesn't want to pay any monthly fees.
Yeah. He's too cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? He shouldn't. The Game Show Network and CNBC. Why would you pay, right?
He doesn't even think they should pay for cable because they watch so little. But
the Amazon Cube has Echo built in. Frankly, okay. I think if you have vision issues, either Echo or Google or both are really great, really useful.
Okay.
So I think that probably would be the best way to do it. There's one more way that's a little more complicated. I mentioned this Logitech Harmony Hub, which will control a lot more devices, including a Roku. And then you can pair it to an Amazon Echo. I think you could do it to the Google Assistant as well and control it with your voice. But this Cube is all in one, and it's pretty straightforward. The thing to do is go to the website and make sure it can control your cable set-top box.
Got it. Okay. Hey, that has been a great help because that's my mission when I get up there is I've got to set him up.
You're a good brother and a good son. I think that's a great choice.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. Have a good time. And I'll see you in the Mermaids.
All right.
Maybe the winter. I'll wait until it's a little cooler. How about that? Actually, Kim says, I didn't spell it phonetically. That's how it's spelled, Weeki Wachee. It's just spelled phonetically. 8888, ask Leo. You have some suggestions. We've had calls on multi-room sound. We've had calls on controlling a TV with a voice. If you've got a solution, remember that I'm not the only tech guy here. You can help too. Just 8888, ask Leo. Give me a ring and join the fun. We have a few more minutes, about 20 more minutes to go in the show. Actually, I take that back. Maybe we don't have that much time because there's always Dick DiBartolo. He's coming up in a few minutes. Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer and our gadget fiend. But first, George in Santa Monica. Hi, George.
Good afternoon, Leo. This is George. I'm Dickie D's caption man.
Oh, George does such a good job with that. It's a little caption contest. You find some great pictures. It's so much fun.
I got a great website for people who hate telemarketers.
Oh.
Called RoboKiller.
I don't know. I know Nomo Robo, but I don't know Robo Killer. All right. Do you use this?
What it does, it's $2.99 a month. What they do, they take your contacts in your phone. And so if you get a call from somebody that's in your contact, I'll be fine. But what it is, they play about 20 or 30 different tapes to bother people that are calling in the telemarketers. It's great.
Revenge is sweet. I'm not sure. I guess that's okay. They're calling you. You might as well drive them nuts.
Yeah, there's one guy that he's actually sounds like a radio personality. He's saying, hey, you guys, you can get a free Caribbean trip.
Oh.
It bothers them. It takes...
Robo-callers. I love it.
No, robo-killer.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying you're turning the tables on the robocallers.
Turn the table on them, and it takes about 2 or 3 minutes of tape, so it bothers them, so they might not call you back anymore. it's worth $30 a year to be bothered.
And you use this, George? Let me play a little bit. This is bots in action on the robo. Oh, that's the answer.
Just call me, be monitored.
He's coughing the whole time.
Yeah, and there's about 20 or different ones.
Hey, George, thank you. That's a good tip. RoboKiller.com, $2.49 a month. And you can harass the marketers, the telemarketers. Dick DiBartolo coming up right after this. Sounds like Jolly Roger guy. I wonder if it is.
Hi. Hello, this is Paul Lee, monitored.
Sorry, hold on. I'm having a coffee fit. Hold on. hold on. This is really bad.
Just driving crazy.
Oh, man. Hold on. Oh, hang on.
I wonder if this is Jolly Roger guy. Or is he just... That's so funny. He's just coughing the whole... It's driving him crazy. We play disco about this time for one reason only. Mr. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. You've read him in Mad Magazine for years. I know I grew up reading him, and he's actually younger than me, so I don't even understand how that works. Yeah. He also is a gadget fanatic, or a gizmo wizard, as we call him, and he joins us each week. Yes.
All right, so I found about this gadget at CE Week, and I think it's a great idea. Now, I've not used it. I just spoke to the lady who helped invent it. And if you yourself tend to leave the house and leave appliances on, or you're taking care, you're a caregiver, and you're afraid that someone you know leaves the house with appliances on, this is the workaround that this inventor came up with. It's called iTemp, EYE-temp. And it's a little device. It's about the size of a 9-volt battery. And it attaches to each appliance that you want to monitor. Now, you would probably set it up for an elderly person. So what you would do is, They're $30 each. One iTemp is $30. And you buy it and they ship it to you. Then you go onto their website, and the woman said she has thousands of profiles of appliances. And when you put in what appliance it is, it says, take the iTemp and place it here on the appliance. And then the iTemp keeps track of the temperature, how long it's been on. And if it notices it's starting to rise above a temperature that device normally operates on, it will send you an alert if you're not home. And if you don't pay attention to the alert, it will send text to three people of your choosing. And down the road, I don't think it was in operation yet, or I'm not sure. If no one replies or takes action, a call center will take over and start calling more people.
Wow. So this is like if you leave the oven on, right?
The oven on. And and at CE Week, they even had one stuck on the side of a candle, a glass enclosed candle, so that it would tell you, you know, that candle's been on for 4 hours now. Are you sure you don't want to go down and look at? Yeah. I thought the price was decent, and I think the idea is good. And it's there at i-temp.com, and it's a new company, and they were showing this off at CE Week.
We're going to start seeing, I imagine, a lot of devices as we age and our parents age, for people who are, as one of our callers earlier today, taking care of older parents who maybe have dementia, or you know, they just need a little extra care. This seems like there's products in this category, just it's going crazy right now.
Yeah, no, I like this because it's for things that aren't smart appliances already.
Right.
So, you know, like your oven or or the steam iron.
Right, right.
So I think it's a good idea for that.
iTemp.
Temp.
And you'll find more about this at Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. That's where he hangs his hat. You just click on the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy button. You can also click on the What the Heck Is It contest. It's a brand new contest in town.
Yes, it is. It is.
What was that device? It looked like a ribbon, you know, like a grocery store ribbon or something.
That's a good guess. Most people thought it was a cigarette roller to make it to roll your own cigarettes. It actually is a sushi maker.
Of course it was.
That
for
I
making
found
sushi
on Amazon.
Wow. So it was a roller. It looked like a roller.
It was a roller, exactly. Yeah. You know, we got a lot of fun answers. You
did,
know, it
did
was
you get a lot of right answers?
No, just two people knew exactly what it was.
So the way this works is Dick will put up a picture of a thing of some kind, and you identify it, and you have a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You can get the right answer, sure. Or you could just do a clever wrong answer. He likes to reward people who don't know anything. And so either way, check the rules and go to gizwiz.biz while you're there. Don't forget, of course, all of the other products Dick mentions on the other shows he does, including World News Now, and the GizWiz podcast at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. See you next week.
A wonderful week.
You too, pal. Bye.
Dick celebrates. You said you're celebrating the 4th of July tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, exactly.
Yeah, to avoid the crowds.
Yeah, there'll be no crowds. I have a sparkler, and I'm set. You'll be able to see, if you're in New York, you'll be able to see it from up to a foot away.
Look for the sparkler near Disneyland. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy, take care.
Last call of the day. Brett, Fontana, California. Hi, Brett. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. A couple questions. I have a General Dynamics A200 notebook that I use in my locksmith business. And occasionally I need Wi-Fi when I program motorcycles or ATV crafts.
Yeah.
Is there a way I can connect my iPhone so it connects automatically? Every time I try, it just boots it off.
So accept it. The General Dynamics, boy, I haven't heard that name in a while. Does it have Wi-Fi built into it?
Yes.
Okay. So your smartphone, all smartphones, but certainly iPhones, have a hotspot mode.
Right.
It is dependent on your carrier. Some carriers want to charge you for that. So it may not be enabled. Depends on who you're getting your internet service from. In some cases, you have to contact the carrier and say, I want to use hotspot mode. But presuming that hotspot mode is enabled, you'll see it in the settings right under cellular, personal hotspot.
Right.
You turn that on. You'll see that it will allow you to change the password if you want. So what you'll do on your laptop is once you turn this on your phone, it's getting its internet access through the phone carrier, obviously. Turn on the laptop. You go to the Wi-Fi settings in the laptop, and you'll pick the name of the hotspot that your phone says. In my case, it's Leo's iPhone 10, but it'd be whatever your phone is. And then the Wi-Fi password as in the settings, as you've set up in the settings. And then it will log in, and your laptop will think it's on a regular Wi-Fi connection. In fact, it's on your phone connection.
Well, every time it does that, when I do my password, it goes up for a minute, and it just disconnects.
Huh.
So there's a thing I'm trying to figure out. Is there a setting that I...
Who's your cell carrier?
T-Mobile.
Yeah, T-Mobile offers this. I don't think they charge you extra for it. I'm on T-Mobile as well. I have to think maybe this is an issue with the laptop, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. I mean, in my case, I'm looking at my just turn on the personal hotspot. In a minute or two, as you've already noted, you'll see the name of your phone in the Wi-Fi access settings. There it is, Leo's iPhone X.
iPhone.
Yep, I'll type in the password. You sure you're using the right password?
Yeah.
Yeah, you said it. It's right there on the screen, so you know what it is. It's not a mystery. And then it should just turn it on and use it. If it's timing out, there's a couple of reasons Wi-Fi times out. One is because the password's wrong. Obviously, that's not it. Maybe your laptop's not compatible with your iPhone. I don't know why that would be. You can buy, maybe this is a good choice, they're not very expensive, $5, $10, USB Wi-Fi access devices that you just attach to your laptop, and that would work. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.